Midwood, your time has come. No more shopping in the rain. No more trucking 45 miles to the Southern Mall. No thank you. No more Saturday night and where are my kids? And on a personal note, as a beloved parent, it gives me great personal pleasure to share with you this, our wonderful mall, the new Midwood Mall.
Any child of the 80s has more than his or her share of mall stories. There's suburban Shangri-Las offering stores like Bugle Boy, Merry-Go-Round, perhaps the Tom McCann shoes. Or maybe you're into browsing electronics at Crazy Eddie's, getting the latest cassette tapes from The Wall or Suncoast, toy shopping at KB Toys, Kitty City, or sneaking a peek at the adult novelties available at Spencer's Gifts. The mall culture is featured prominently in countless films of the era, Say Anything, Weird Science, Back to the Future, Night of the Comet. Then there was the Citizen Kane of malls, the Sherman Oaks Galleria, for that was not only the birthplace of the Valley Girl culture, but it provided the setting for such films as Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Commando, Terminator 2, Chopping Mall, and tonight's feature, Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge, or Gaston Leroux shopping at the Chess King. Good evening, and welcome to another edition of Natsukashi, where we like to hang out in the food court of our minds, sipping sweet orange Julius's of nostalgia. And tonight, we have with us the Foy Wonder, Mr. Scott Foy, who recalled this 1986 horror film from his youth. Holly, Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Excellent. And we have joining us, too, Eric himself, Mr. Derek Rydahl. Derek, thank you, and welcome back to the program.
Good to be here. And I just might add that of all those movies you listed, of course, Phantom of Mall was the best depiction of the Galleria.
Of mall culture?
Of mall culture.
Well, good. And it was actually probably the most prominently featured in all of them, memory serves correctly.
And I think we are the only one with the distinction of blowing it up.
That's true. Even though Commando did quite a...
They did some damage, didn't they? Yeah. I don't think they blew the whole mall up. But.
No, you guys definitely wear the tiara and sash for that one.
It's painful. But if you ever want to get to the bottom of this, you have to tell me what happened.
We went to Eric's house that night. It was about 11 o'clock, I think. I remember how all the developers had the houses condemned.
Yeah.
Well, they left a notice on Eric's door. God, he was so mad.
These goddamn developers are really pissing me off.
They're still bugging you guys?
Yeah, they won't stop hassling my mom and dad.
All right, so Scott, when did you first encounter Phantom of the Mall?
The first place I saw anything about it was I saw previews on television for this movie called Phantom of the Mall that was playing at a theater near other people but not near me. Like, I really wanted to see it. Then there was a show I used to watch on MTV. It was a movie show hosted by Chris Connolly. I don't even remember what it was called exactly, but they showed clips from the movie. Like, damn it, I want to see this movie.
Right.
And so I had to wait for it to come out on video. Read it on the first day. Couldn't wait to see it.
All right, so Derek, this is one of three genre pictures in which you starred, including Popcorn, which we covered on a previous podcast.
Right.
Was there something about this, about the horror genre, that kept pulling you back in?
Just when I thought I got out, he pulled me back in again. I think it was just, during that time, there was a lot of these kind of things being made, and I was, the type and the age to be the kind of heroic guy or even the goofy hero in those kinds of movies, and that was just... And once you do one and you start to get asked to try out or be involved in more, it just kind of happened that way. There was no plan. It was fun, but I didn't specifically gravitate toward that. I might have preferred to do a movie with Coppola, let's say, or Spielberg, as opposed to, no.
At least in this one, you got to play the bad guy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was fun.
It was so awful, Peter.
Hey, it's okay.
It's almost like a bad dream, you know?
Yeah. I think I know what's going on. See if this makes any sense to you. The guard with the earring has got to be the guy that you saw at Eric's house that night. Now he's working here at the mall, and nobody in mall administration seems to know who he is. Somebody is covering up for him. But who?
Posner? But why?
Because Eric's family wouldn't move out. They must have hired the guard with the earring to torch Eric's house, the guy you saw that night.
But why would he come around now? Peter, what if Eric didn't really die in that fire?
Would explain a lot of things. The song on the jukebox, the flowers.
Yeah, and the dress in my car.
There's one way to prove it.
How?
We see if Eric's really buried at Walker's Grove. The grave's empty, we'll know he's alive.
Let's get into the plot a little bit. It's a reworking, obviously, of Phantom of the Opera. Focuses on a bunch of teens who are, you know, completely, like, totally psyched when the new mall opens in their town. But an unscrupulous developer and the town mayor have erected a shopping paradise on the charred earth that used to be your home, you being Eric Matthews. But little do they know, you're still lurking about in its labyrinthine air ducts, exacting revenge and pining the loss of your lady love, who was so distraught about your death that she accepted the job inside the restaurant. Inside the mall, I'm sorry. It was budgeted for about $3 million. Director Richard Friedman?
Right.
Yeah. He had he also had a number of horror flicks, low-budget horror flicks like Dune Asylum and Scared Stiff. Was this released theatrically? Because I recall it never appearing around me either, and I did see the same ads that Scott said he saw.
I do believe it was released theatrically. In fact, I'm pretty sure all three of those films were released, you know, in limited,
okay,
limited releases.
Basically playing major markets, because I know it was
markets,
playing,
yeah,
the commercials I saw were for theaters in New Orleans.
And I think it played in San Francisco, and it might have been in one theater in L.A., New York, you know. I don't remember, but I do remember it did get a theatrical release.
All right, tell us a little about this character, Eric Matthews, this hero slash anti-hero.
Yeah, well, basically, you know, he's the sort of up-and-coming gymnast, jock.
Kickboxer.
Yeah, right. Popular, you know, with the beautiful popular girl and everything. You don't see all this at first, but everything, you learn some of these things in flashback. Everything going for him. And this, you know, company moves in to build this mall, and they buy out all the houses in his neighborhood to tear them down and build this mall. And his parents are the last holdout, and they refuse. And so somebody is hired to torch his place, and he ends up getting his girlfriend out safely, but seemingly giving his life in the process. And then, of course, the house seemingly burns down and seemingly gets torn down eventually, and a mall gets built. But lo and behold, Eric has somehow created in this time a lair beneath where his house used to be, and therefore beneath the mall, where he waits until the mall is complete to come out and exact his revenge on all the people that were responsible for the death of his family and the destruction of his life and ultimately the maiming of his own face and body from the fire.
Very patient, if you think about it, because it probably took about 2 years for that mall to be built, and where was he hiding?
Exactly.
I'm just gonna wait. Not yet. A little bit longer.
I think of it, maybe there's a little bit of that, the True Blood kind of thing, where the vampires, when they're new, they bury themselves in the grave,
right,
in the dirt, you know, and it takes a while to eventually come out. I'm thinking something like that now, you know.
Is this where you've been the whole time?
Yeah. Don't you know the place below my house? It was a place I used to work out, hang out. It was a special place. Well, this is it. Well, what's left of it? Let me show you something. Okay, be right here. Let me show you something.
I never quite understood how he built it so quickly. Even as the fire was raging, he must have been digging.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, that fire scene is actually quite hilarious. If you look back on it now, just the kind of the staging of it, like, I smell smoke. Let me open the door. Oh, raging inferno.
Right.
Burning down. Melody's hanging out, you know, the girlfriend Melody is hanging out of the window, like all of one story off the ground, screaming, "Don't let me fall!" It's like,
right?
Oh, God, yeah, God forbid you twist your ankle.
Right. And I think she does twist her ankle, right?
Sort of yeah, and somehow yeah. manages to knock herself unconscious on the grass.
Yeah.
Right.
Scott, you mentioned in a prior article, which I had read, that this had been a film that would make a prime candidate for a remake.
Yeah, and you know what? And I'll let you know a little funny thing here. It was a review I did of a movie. I don't know if you want me to say what the movie was, but anyway, I did the review of this particular film that ran recently, and I got an email from the screenwriters afterwards, and their only response to my review was, "We absolutely love your idea of remaking Phantom of the Mall." So it may be responsible for a remake.
That's funny. I was actually signed originally to a 3-picture deal on that. They had planned on, building this character into a ongoing franchise.
Really?
And, yeah.
Was that partly responsible for that awkward title?
You mean the Eric's Revenge?
Yeah, the colon Eric's Revenge on there. It always seemed like kind of an awkward fit.
That's probably.
It sounds like it's the first movie, but it sounds like it has the sequel's title.
Yeah.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, that might be. I don't know. They never quite explained that to me, and I did never go on to do the sequels, as we know.
I'm sorry about the way I look.
I always knew you were alive. I knew it. You were watching over me, weren't you?
Yeah. Nobody will ever hurt you, Melody. Nobody. I won't allow it.
Please don't be afraid.
Did you see Phantom of the Opera prior to this, or did you do that once you signed on?
Well, I'd seen Phantom, like the old version, but never any. I don't know if there's any newer versions at the time, or if, I don't think the play. I don't remember if the play was out at the time, the musical, any of that kind of stuff. But I'd seen it, you know.
Like the Lon Chaney version.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I don't remember if I actually re-looked at it at all. I don't remember. I don't think I did.
This film is also notable for two of your co-stars, Rob Estes, who went on to be the lead in Silk Stockings, as well as the Weasel himself, Mr. Pauly Shore.
Yes.
And he starred as Buzz, kind of a prankish yogurt stand operator who never had a shortage of fake body parts to put into his yogurt.
Melly, Susie, how you guys doing, huh?
They let you handle the food?
I promise not to spit in your yogurt.
Ugh, I'll pass.
She'll have a vanilla, Buzz.
Okay, vanilla.
Trail mix.
Here you go. Melly, what are you gonna have?
I think I might have a vanilla also.
Oh, hey. Hey, here's our extra.
Gross.
We'll share it with you guys, but really look, there's not enough for three.
Buzz off, Buzz.
I heard that one before.
We're all pretty tight, and we were together for a while, and hung out even afterwards for a while. And as I told you, the story that happened to me the last time we talked, at a certain point in my acting career, I kind of had this experience. Actually, it was while I was shooting Popcorn, and you know, I eventually dropped out of the business,
right,
and kind of out of society for a period of time. And during that time, you know, I lost a lot of the connections to those folks.
Was Pauly Shore, was he kind of honing his persona at that time? Because it seemed like, and Scott mentioned this too in his written piece to this, but it seemed like the least weaselly performance before he actually, you know, kind of took on that whole weasel persona.
Yeah, it's nothing really to compare it to that I know of, or not much before that, what he was doing before that, but he was definitely that kind of guy around the set, and you know, it was only so much that he could bring into the character based on what they let him do. But you know, you could see the signs of the beginnings of the Pauly Shore that was to come in those days, for sure.
And worst of all, he's allowed to live.
Yeah. That would have been a great death.
Speaking of deaths, was there an unusually large cobra population around that mall? Because one of the most famous deaths involves, obviously, you sneaking a real snake into the plumbing system where it proceeds to bite one of the characters in the crotchal area.
Right. I think I stole it from the mall pet store.
Okay.
That, of course, begs the question, what kind of a shopping mall keeps live poisonous snakes at the pet store?
Exactly.
Apparently, the same shopping mall that keeps workable flamethrowers in the hardware store where anyone can get to them right next to the propane tanks.
Exactly. It was a special place, you know. It was an ideal mall. Yeah, I don't really know where that idea, how they justified it. You know, the movie wasn't really too interested in justifying things.
Yeah.
Obviously.
And that is part of the fun of those kind of movies, you know.
Well, you know, for me, the cobra scene, the fact that he literally snaked a cobra through the pipes
right,
and killed
right.
this guy
yeah.
is less inexplicable than the fact that he somehow managed to get it to go right up into the right toilet.
Yes.
that is some exquisite knowledge of plumbing.
Well, I had trained him. You know, it had taken a while to train that snake by putting some food in the toilet, and over time, he eventually got trained to go there.
And you know, you also have to keep in mind the fact that the guy he was killing with the cobra was the mall piano player who apparently also part-timed as a parking lot rapist or something, who you had already shot in the shoulder with a crossbow. And looking at the wound he had on his shoulder when he takes off his jacket to sit on the toilet, I think he was going to die anyway in a few minutes.
Scott, didn't the malls you hang out in have their own piano player?
You know, I'm trying to think of if they had any instruments at all working there. I live in South Mississippi. We don't have any of those fancy California malls here with the piano players and the flamethrowers and the cobras. You know, where I live, a mall opening is not a black tie affair.
This mall is going to be a gold mine. And when I finish with my plans for expansion, there's going to be even bigger bucks.
Well, actually, that's what I stopped by to talk to you about, Harv. First, I wanted to congratulate you on a very successful opening. And then I just thought you might be interested to know that there's some talk going on downtown about supporting you for the city council. And if things keep going the way they have been around here, I might be persuaded to throw my support behind you, too.
Oh, Karen, I want you to know that your guidance and support is of the utmost importance to me. I mean that. I mean that sincerely.
Gee, Harvey, you sound like you're running for office already. Oh, by the way, can you keep a leash on that son of yours, Justin? I'm getting complaints from the shop owners already. Bye, Harv.
Derek, a bunch of kids, a movie, and a mall. There's got to be tons of stories. I mean, did you guys have free reign to this place? Did you get to, you know, film after hours?
Yeah, we filmed after hours primarily. You know, I was in makeup for 2.5 to 3 hours every day, and, you know, putting on that the disguise and the mask and all that. And I walked around a lot of times during mall hours just looking like that. And, you know, that was a very interesting experience to see the looks of people of not knowing I was, you know, I would just play around with people's minds, you know, by being that guy with the melted, you know, burnt, very badly burnt face. But over time, it had a very interesting experience to me. It actually started to make me become more and more isolated for real. When I was in full makeup. And feel really, really isolated and feel weird. And so it's kind of, you know, being kind of a method actor, I used it, of course. But that was an interesting thing. You know, when I wasn't in full makeup, and I mean, I still hung out with them, but I started to feel very self-conscious and very into the character. So when I was in full makeup a lot of days, I became pretty isolated. Other than that, I mean, we were always pulling pranks on each other. And Polly was, you know, very big on pulling pranks. You know, one of the scenes where we light... Where my character, though, was ultimately a stunt guy, gets lit on fire, you know, and gets thrown, goes off of the balcony. They actually set off the whole sprinkler system in the mall and, you know, did thousands and thousands of dollars worth of damage. So that was fun. And we used to just, you know, just go all over the place and, you know, do all kinds of crazy stuff, having the mall pretty much to our own after hours, as well as shooting night shifts, you know, and being up. Showing up for work at, you know, at 5 o'clock at night and, you know, getting done at 5 a.m. and then all of us going out for breakfast afterwards and pretty much not getting much sleep, you know, and party until the next time to shoot, whatever, you know, we were young and corrupted.
Ladies and gentlemen, when I was campaigning for the office of mayor of this city, I made you some promises. And today, we see our efforts come to fruition. Ladies and gentlemen, we have finally succeeded in putting Midwood on the map.
Morgan Fairchild, what was it like working with her?
She was really cool, you know, down to earth, and it was fun doing the stuff with her. And she gets thrown out. Doesn't she get thrown out of a window there?
You didn't quite look strong enough to gorilla press someone above your head and throw them out of a window, but you did. And that was the clip that every show promoting the movie ran.
Yes.
So it's like, here's the end of the movie. Go see the movie.
And I think actually, if I remember correctly, that when she's actually lifted up, is not me doing it. There's a stunt double in there.
It's also quite apparent that it's a stunt double for her as well.
Yeah.
Which makes it all the more amusing.
Eric, I don't belong here.
I got this all for you, Melody. So we could be together.
Eric, I can't stay.
You will stay here. I won't let you go. Ever.
Eric, I can't. I have a life up there.
No. No. Without me, you would have no life.
Your voice. A lot of people said that they were most freaked out, not by your face, but by your voice in this. What was the process that went through?
If I remember correctly, I had to re-loop the entire movie doing that voice. And I don't remember if it was actually run through any kind of process. I think it was like after the fact. They might have digitized it a little bit after the fact. I don't know the specifics about that voice, but I do remember having to loop scenes from that.
You know, I think your character in the movie, I think he's the only character to ever spend more time crawling through air ducts in a single movie than John McClane.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how many people actually picked up on this, but Eric from Phantom of the Mall is also kind of a historical footnote as far as slasher concerned, because I think he's the first movie slasher to actually have corporate sponsorship.
Which was, what was that?
Jeez, he's terrorizing people wearing a shirt that has a big old Nike logo on it.
Oh, that's right.
Makes me wonder, how did the Nike people feel like, oh, good, it's our product placement. He's killing people with our logo on it.
I remember that, getting a lot of different clothes and things from Nike, shoes and things. It's funny. At the time, I wasn't thinking about the product placement aspect of it, but that's pretty funny.
Fire last year. I'm the one that took your picture when they brought you in.
You have a good memory.
That fire happened around here somewhere, didn't it?
Yeah, you're standing on it.
You know, you were pretty hysterical that night. I remember you kept saying you saw some guy.
Yeah, I saw him.
And you said he had a medal in his ear?
Yeah, some kind of religious symbol.
I don't know about you, but that sounds suspicious to me.
Yeah. Well, no one ever believed me. No investigation, nothing. Eric was murdered and nobody cared.
Well, Scott, you reviewed this again for the sake of the podcast, and what did you get out of Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge, this go-round?
Well, you know, the first time, when I first saw it a long time ago, I thought it was enjoyable, it was quirky, it wasn't anything great, you're clearly aware of all of its faults. Watching it now, like, you know, more of an adult now, kind of being more of a fan of, like, bad movies, this movie is a lot of fun to watch. It is really, really silly.
Yeah.
It is a really goofy movie, but it's a fun goofiness.
Right.
It's basically the epitome of a good, bad movie.
Yeah.
I mean, all the stuff involving Gregory Scott Cummings as the hitman for hire.
Right.
who wouldn't dare lose his earring.
Well, let me see if I get this straight. Rob Estes' character takes a picture of him, and this drives him crazy. But he's in the mall where every camera is taking a picture of him, and everybody in public can see him.
Right, exactly.
So he starts chasing this cameraman, and he's knocking over baby carriages. He's climbing up on top of the elevators and screaming upside down. He's trying to keep a low profile, and the guy who runs, the evil guy running the mall, tells him, you know, you need to lose that earring. It makes you too, you know, identifiable. Like, yeah, well, what about all the chaos you just caused in the mall, or the demolition derby in the parking lot?
There. What about you on looking back at this film? I mean, you obviously knew that, you know, that it had its sense of humor about it.
Oh, it could have had so much more. I mean, I think it's the stuff that didn't end up in the movie, you know, that would have been truly the most classic. Didn't this movie also, by the way, get listed, like Billy Bob Briggs or some, like it was listed on some all-time top favorite bad movies. It was like the top 10, in the top 10 of them. So it was an interesting distinction. But but I remember, you know, they actually had choreographed an entire dance sequence.
Oh, my God.
For me, the Phantom of the Mall, dancing through the mall, like after I kiss Melanie or something, for the, you know, after all these years or something. You know, there's that scene down in the lair where I think she shows up, or I get her down there, rather, and then I think we kiss or something. I don't remember the exact when it was supposed to happen, but there's this whole, and we actually choreographed it. They had me, you know, literally pole dancing almost at certain points. And doing, you know, flash dance. My version of flash dance, you know, would have given new meaning to the word maniac.
Yeah, right.
And I'm dancing, you know, dancing around, you know, like, you know the guard railings on the edge of each walkway so you don't fall over to the next floor.
Right.
I would be, like, you know, running along like some crazy mixture of Footloose and flash dance, kind of, you know, rolling along the bars and then leaping out of frame and then swinging from stuff, you know, and just, and they never filmed it. I wish the heck they had filmed it at least and would have been on, like, you know, the DVD extras or something. But
I think the problem was the movie kind of came along just a little bit before Scream, that sort of nether realm where the MPAA was cracking down on the gore, so they were trying to make the slasher movies a little more lighthearted. But they weren't really committed to going full comedy with it, so...
Yeah.
Right, right.
As if Death by Escalator wasn't comedy enough.
Oh,
yeah,
right,
and who
right.
Is he killing? It's the evil mall operator's son, who
right.
looks like Patrick Dempsey, dressed up like a cast member of the Warriors.
That's Tom Fridley, actually. He actually... We hung out a lot, too. He's actually John Travolta's nephew.
Oh, really?
Yeah, his mom is John Travolta's sister.
That explains the hair.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. He even had that kind of Vinnie Barbarino attitude. You know, he kind of walked, kind of like, hey, you know. And one of the girls also, one of the leads, the blonde, I'm drawing a blank now.
Carrie?
Not Carrie. Carrie was actually a former playmate, too.
Yeah, she was a former Playboy playmate, yet there was her one nude scene, obviously
yeah.
body doubles.
Yeah.
Well, that's absolutely right, because I was in that scene, and that was very, that was interesting, you know, that on the day of, you know, it was a closed set, and then, you know, she got this body double, and we all kind of thought that was odd, considering she was a Playboy playmate, but I guess she had decided she'd done that and wanted to try to move beyond that. I really don't know. The other girl, the blonde...
Kimber Sissons.
Kimber Sissons, that's right.
Yeah.
She was actually dating Richard Grieco. Remember him?
Oh, yeah. 21 Jump Street.
Well, you're talking about the character of Melody. But, you know, watching the movie again, you come to realize she's supposed to be all sweet and innocent, but she's really just dumb.
Yeah.
She does not come across as being very bright, especially when she tells Eric, you know, I'm in love with Peter now. You know, the Rob
right.
Estes character. I'm in love with this guy who I've only known for 2 days, and all we've talked about is your murder.
Yeah.
Right.
And I loved his makeshift office there, which was essentially consisted of a filing cabinet in his living room.
Right.
No, yeah. Actually, the one thing about the movie that stood out for me that I never picked up on until now was the final scene of the movie before they show Eric's body charred but not waking up, which was odd. It's like outside, the mall's exploded,
right.
and there's, you know, Rob Estes and Melody and... And she's just, like, all bubbly, like, I guess Eric got what he wanted.
Right.
And then Rob Estes with this big grin on his face, but I got better, I got you. And then he plants this kiss on her, like, what a dick thing to say. what a douchey thing to say. I mean, yeah, okay, sure, Eric's a homicidal maniac, but, you know, he did have a valid reason for being angry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought at the end, I didn't see it recently, but I thought at the end that my eyes do pop open. We shot it that way. But I guess it's not there, is it? My eyes don't open at the end.
You know, I've watched that. I remember back then, even and today, watching, and I don't see the eyes open.
Is there a panel in the mall?
wonderfully politically incorrect theme song. Is he the Phantom of the Mall or just some retard in a broken hockey mask? Did you get a chance to hear that prior to its release?
No, I didn't. I had no idea what they were going to do at the end there.
I wish I had.
The true tragedy is that the song is not available on MP3 anywhere.
Right.
I've searched for that song before, but apparently it never got released anywhere except the closing credits of the movie.
It's time to dim the lights on this particular podcast, but before doing so, I want to thank our returning contributor, Mr. Scott Foy, a.k.a. The Foy Wonder, who you can visit at foywonder.com or dreadcentral.com, or I should say, and dreadcentral.com. And another big thanks to Mr. Derek Rydahl for revisiting his role of Eric, and you can be sure to check out Derek at derekrydahl.com, scriptwritercentral.com, and enlightenedentertainer.com, and his books, There's No Business Like Soul Business, and I Could Have Written a Better Movie Than That, are also available on amazon.com. Gentlemen, thank you again for participating in this little program, and you all have a pleasant evening.
Thank you.
All right, take care, guys.
Been fun.
Echoes of memories of shattered dreams will never fill the air.